Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is TWiT Photo, episode 28, recorded on October 11th, 2011. Sue Bryce.
TWiT Photo is brought to you by RingCentral.com. It's the number one cloud-based phone system for your business. Start with your 30-day risk-free trial at RingCentral.com. And by Netflix. Watch thousands of TV episodes and movies on your PC, Mac, iPad, iPhone, or TV instantly. All streamed directly to you, saving you time, money, and hassle. For your free 30-day trial, go to Netflix.com/TWiT. Hi, everyone. Welcome back to TWiT Photo. This is Alex Lindsay sitting in for Leo, who's on vacation. Now, I know you're worried Leo's not here, but Catherine Hall still is. Hey, Catherine.
Thank you, Alex. We're so, so excited to have you here.
I'm happy to be here. I'm excited.
Being a part of the show.
Well, thank you.
Which is going to be extra special.
We actually have a guest in studio.
So this is our first time. Yeah. So if there's any hiccups, apologize in advance. But anyway, it should be great. I've been following Sue's work for a while now. And if I could have anyone in the world shoot me for a beauty portrait, a glamour shot, any kind of portrait where I wanted to look beautiful, anyone in the world, it would be this woman sitting right here. She's phenomenal. She just won Australian Portrait Photographer of the Year, is one of her most recent accolades among many. And I'm just so thrilled and happy and honored to have you here, especially from all the way from, wait, I wanted to give our viewers and the audience a guess. How can you tell when someone's from Australia or from New Zealand by the word milk?
How do you take your coffee?
Because there's always, I always wonder, like, if people have an Australian accent, I'm scared to say, are you from New Zealand or Australia? Because there's an ego a lot of times.
There's an issue.
Yeah, people are, oh no. Mm-hmm. So how can you tell?
Kiwis say mug.
Mug?
Mug, yeah. Uh-huh. And Australians say milk.
So yes, Australians say milk, and Kiwis say milk.
Milk. It's quite obvious, yeah.
Excellent.
So you just ask people how they like their coffee, and then you don't have to ask them the awkward questions.
Yeah.
Excellent. I'm going to.
And then you could be all knowing. You could be like, "Oh, so you're from New Zealand?" And people that are usually probably assume that they're from Australia because there's a lot more of them.
Right.
So then you can look really smart.
That is the key to the operation.
This is our main tip today.
Yes, that's our tip. You thought you were coming here for photography tips, but it turns out that we're going to tell you how to tell the difference. Today's episode, how to tell the difference between a Kiwi and Australia.
Yeah. So anyway, we're going to start off the show with as we always do, with a tip. Mm-hmm. So you can go ahead and head over to my blog. So first off, I just wanted to emphasize to all you photographers out there the importance of tests. And what I mean by a test is a shoot that you put together. And I highly encourage pulling together an entire team, makeup artist, a stylist, a photographer. The more people involved, the higher quality the shoot's going to be, assuming everyone's at the same level of quality. And really getting out there, the importance for test shoots is staying inspired, doing projects that you really are excited about but a client may not want to commission, trying things that are a little risky.
Well, and a lot of times one of the issues with clients is that they don't know what they want necessarily.
Exactly.
And you need to show them what they
want. Exactly. Right. And so I had this idea for this old period piece, we can scroll down, that I wanted to do in San Francisco. And shoot a bunch of women in sort of a World War II era in this building that's insanely beautiful, Julia Morgan Ballroom, really beautiful space. And we put together a team. And Sue, I wanted to hear your input on tests. What do you feel about them?
Definitely. It's something that I tell photographers in my workshops and in my platforms to do. You know, when you lose you start losing your creative love for what you do and you start paying bills and becoming a non-photographer and you get really disconnected. I always say do a shoot that you just really love, just a free shoot or a test shoot, something that just really inspires your passion, and then you blog about it and you don't have to say it was a freebie. People know that you're working and it brings all of your passion just flooding back immediately.
Do you find that clients come to you, you do a test shoot, and then they see it and they want something similar to that?
Of course. Yeah.
So then it's another way. People hire for you for what they see.
It's advertising.
Yeah. So it's another way of getting hired for what you want to do.
Well, and it's one of the ways to get out of the rut of the only thing you get hired to do is what you've done in the past.
Exactly.
You know, and if all you do is what falls in, you're not really taking a real control over your destiny.
And what you show, you attract. So, you know,
exactly.
If you show a genre, you attract only that genre.
And that's another tip. We'll just give a freebie tip. But that's so huge is that a lot of times photographers complain, well, people only hire me for this. Or people, and it doesn't matter if you're a pro or you're an amateur, people only want me to shoot this. Yeah. And I go, well, what are you showing? Well, this, because that's what everyone keeps asking me to shoot. And it's like this vicious cycle. And so a test is a way to break out of that. And I only show exactly what I want to shoot. I don't show things that I'm not really passionate about. So,
anyway. And it's hard. I think it's hard because a lot of times you have so much work in a certain area, and you have so little work in the area that you want to go into. I know that we do that on the video end all the time.
Yeah. So anyway, we're showing the Julia Morgan Ballroom too, and they do a lot of events and weddings. So anyone that's out there that wants to get married, wants to get weddinged.
It's a really
great place to get wedding.
Phew.
Anyone that wants to get married in San Francisco, you can see this venue is like the epiphany of old world San Francisco. It's so rich. It's so beautiful. It's just exquisite. So,
where is
and
that
the
in
staff
San
there is insane.
Where is it in San Francisco?
In San Francisco, it's downtown.
Okay.
Yeah, like right by the cable car tracks.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. Linda Hyland is works with them, and she's one of the most amazing people I've ever met. She's just on top of it. She knows everyone. Very connected. So anyway, we digress. So back to Sue Bryce. Well, super psyched to have you here today. I think I want to launch the show so people can kind of understand where she comes from and what she's capable of with some of her before and afters. So Sue, first off, how did you get into doing the type of photography that you do right now?
I've never done anything else. So when I was 22, the glamour photography, glamour trend was probably the biggest trend in the world at the time. And I was sort of young and female and caught up in the whole glamour thing. But by the time I started shooting in studio, glamour had gone out of fashion and just had become a dirty word. So I had to kind of evolve a more natural light style in order to keep it alive. Otherwise, I wasn't allowed to do it anymore.
Well, that's actually my question, because even when I was introducing you, I was scared to say glamour photographer, because a lot of times it equates to that like over-processed, studio overlit, cheesy,
Bennett,
too much cleavage, you know, just the whole thing. And it has become a dirty word. So do you call yourself a glamour photographer? And do you ever feel like people judge you based on that title?
I use the word glamour in my byline for my marketing, but I don't call it glamour photography. I call it contemporary portrait, because it is just modern natural light portrait. I focus mostly on trying to change the perception of it, and I can't really do that with words. I can only really show images, and then, but it's so strongly branded, I don't know whether it's something I actually want to walk away from. It is glamour. It's glamour in every form. It's how I would describe my studio and myself. So I just don't use it as a glamour photography, but I definitely use it in there.
Use the word glamour.
Absolutely.
So why natural light?
Because for me, flashlight looks like 80s and 90s glamour. And with models, it looks fashion. But with real women, it looks like really old style of glamour photography that everybody knows and hates. So for me, at the time we were getting rid of the lights and opening the curtains in our studio, my probably inspiration was back then, late 90s, was Herb Ritz, all natural light, just beautiful natural light shooters. And for me, that's how I started to evolve it, and I never went back to flash again.
So we're looking at all these before and afters, and I'm sure our viewers are wondering how much retouching is going on between these before and afters.
Yeah, it's really interesting, because I retouch everything. I retouch my images before my clients see them. It's a finished product for me. For me, the finished product is including retouching. Just like a magazine ad, they retouch the models and they finish it. For me, it's contemporary glamour. It's very modern fashion type glamour. But I have a 2-minute rule. So I choose 30 images from a shoot to show my clients. I retouch all 30 images 2 minutes each. I try and get a setup done in 1 hour.
See, that blows my mind. So you're telling me 2 minutes?
Yeah.
Between that?
Yeah.
2 minutes only retouching her.
And I do there's a live demo on my blog that actually shows me cloning and even contouring bodies, and I do it in under 2 minutes. So I had to prove it because people don't believe it. So.
But it's just fast and furious. I mean, you already kind of have an idea of where you're going to go with it, right? As you're shooting, you can see what I'm going to go in there and grab onto.
It's the same thing with everybody. It's just skin retouching, a bit of body contouring, lifting the eyes. So it's really
because I spend a little more time than 2 minutes, and I don't think mine look as good.
I actually gave.
What am I missing here?
I gave a Photoshop talk once to about 50 photographers, and one of them came up to me afterwards and said, "You've bastardized Photoshop," because I had to learn how to do 24 women a week in order to make money in my studio. So we had to do everything the quick way. So I've learned the quick way to do everything. So.
And she's going to share some tips as we get on later in the show.
Sure. Well, it looks great. The results are all that matter.
You know, I know.
At the end
good makeup, too. Good makeup, good hair, and a good reflector.
I mean, obviously, so retouching is not, there is a drastic difference between the before and afters. Mm. So my first question is, I'll start with the physical and then we'll go to the more depth. But what are you doing exterior-wise to help them evolve from that before to that after?
Well, I don't really like before and afters that much because I don't believe you look like that. You know, everybody looks bad when they get up in the morning with no makeup on and without their hair done. So, but anyway, it's a neat way to show the transformation. I always have a professional stylist with me. So hair and makeup, or I do it myself, is a huge part of what I do just to relax my client, prepare my client. But most of the work that I see in glamour and beauty have really bad hair and makeup. People are not very good at doing it. They're not very good at doing their own. Makeup artists are not very talented. I work with a really amazing selection of makeup artists in all three countries. I have somebody that I can call on that I really love, or I do it myself.
So that's the next question is, because if I were to try to do it for myself, I can't do makeup. I'm not a skilled makeup artist. So how does a photographer know if they're capable of doing makeup in a way that's going to produce results like these? And or is it something that's easily learned, or is it better to really team up with somebody that's what they specialize in? Because I know you have history of working as a makeup artist.
I do, yeah. So I created makeup cards for my website. It's on my blog. You can have a look at them and see my simple rules, and they're just rules that I follow that look really good photographed. So it's actually really easy.
What are three top tips for makeup application?
My rules are all matte foundations, all matte eyeshadows, no shimmers, all matte right through. Even I prefer matte lips with gloss, no shimmers at all, because in natural light they don't photograph well. Big hair, if you can, because big hair looks fabulous and always looks great with air in it. And my third really important is no blush and no contouring with bronzing, because it looks like bruising. I would rather see...
So you do no blush and no contouring?
No, a light dusting of pink on the cheeks to lift the face, and that's it. Blusher, the old way of using blusher and bronzer is that photographs really, really badly. So.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. Huh. Those are my rules.
And then what about, do you feel like that translates to film, to moving picture as well?
Definitely. Of course, yes, because I shoot video, so it's the same makeup.
So then, now for people that say don't want to go down the avenue of learning how to do it themselves, what are some tips on selecting the right makeup artist and hair? Do you usually work with one person that does hair and makeup, and how do you select those professionals?
There's about 5 different ways to hire a makeup artist. You can pay them an hourly rate. You can, I employed 3 full-time makeup artists in my studio in New Zealand and taught them Photoshop, because they picked up Photoshop really easily. It's like doing makeup on the computer. So they had a dual role within my business. So when they weren't doing makeup, they were preparing the images and then preparing orders to go out. So that's all they did was makeup and Photoshop.
Huh.
Do you think that there is something, I know that when, as an effects artist, I was a visual effects artist for a long time. The fact that I was doing modeling and texturing and animation and everything else made a big difference. Do you think that there's something about the fact that you're doing the makeup, you're doing the photography, you're doing the post work that ties all of them together? Like, you know that, oh, I don't have to do this part of the makeup because I'm going to clean that up on the other side, or I'm going to take a photo around it. And when I'm taking the photos, I know that I know exactly what I'm going to clean up. Usually that's something that lives in three or four different people rather than one single person. Do you think that that gives you an advantage?
Totally. Interestingly enough, I don't think the makeup is as heavy as it used to be or as important as it used to be now that Photoshop is so incredibly advanced. So I recently photographed a girl that refused to wear makeup.
Right.
She was, she said, I do not wear it. I do not want to be photographed with it. I do not want my hair done. I just want to wear a ponytail and a singlet and just be photographed like this. And, of course, Photoshop is makeup. It's digital makeup. So, it's not actually that important anymore.
Right. Mm. Yeah. It's
good hair is probably more important than...
Good what?
Good hair.
Yeah.
You can't Photoshop good hair on. So,
right.
I actually think good hair is probably more important than good makeup. Yeah, definitely.
It's so funny because I always thought like makeup was more important than hair, and I'm beginning to realize. I mean, because that's the frame.
Yep.
It's framing your face.
And to be honest with you, people look more natural with less makeup on. They look more themselves.
And that's a lot of times when when I do makeup.
Yes.
So I only do a little bit of makeup. Mm-hmm. We have a matte finish that we just put on everybody.
Yeah.
We tend to, I think that the technical term tends to be dry walling.
Yeah.
But we have this MAC makes this thing. I guess they keep on talking about getting rid of it.
Yeah.
It's this matte finish or whatever, but it's literally like this gel. And we just put it all over someone's face, and we just don't want them to be shiny.
That's the way guys do it. They just go like this.
And it's like this. We like to right here. We just go like this. Just rub it all over them, you know. So, but it is funny that you know, I always find that, you know, trying to work too much of that oftentimes makes people look garish at times.
Garish, because you need some color too. Mm. Right. You don't want to be completely matte.
Yeah.
So, anyway,
I'm going to ask you to flip your hair the other direction.
Oh, is it going over my mat?
It's just going over your mic there.
Oh, but so. Hair is everything. I can't do that.
I know. Your hair is, it's great. It's great. It's everything just on the other side. Other side.
So I have a question. Do you ever get to a point where you are doing something during the retouching process? How do you know when it's too much? Like, say you're slimming in something or you're pulling in something. Do you ever get to a point where you're questioning, oh, I don't know if this is too exaggerated. Is the client going to like this? Is it real enough? Hmm. And how do you respond to that?
All the time. I watch retouch. I teach people how to retouch, and then I spend the rest of the year teaching them how to pull back their retouching.
Yeah.
Everybody does it. So after 10, 15 years of working on Photoshop, you just become so good at doing it that you try not to overdo it. But, yeah, I overwork my images sometimes and have to pull them back.
So what about people that are just getting started? What would be some advice on finding that nice, fine balance, that line of helping but not going over the top?
At the point of showing my images to my client, I want them to think that there's been no retouching done.
Okay.
So I don't remove bags and lines. I remove the shadows underneath them.
I want
to keep the integrity of the face without compromising that. So it's just something you have to learn. You have to try it and learn.
So a lot of people that are familiar with your work assume that there is, you know, we're finding out there's not a lot of retouching, but they assume that there is so much work done.
Yeah.
Why?
I don't know. Good,
I know why. No good reflectors. Well, you have this ability. I mean, if you look at her work, and if you watch the videos, she has a lot of behind-the-scenes videos that are really fascinating to watch. But to bring out this sort of raw, sexy, uninhibited, vulnerable beauty in these women, and I'm wondering how do you do that?
I get asked this a lot. So I don't think it's something you give them. Like, I don't think, like, people say give them a glass of champagne and talk in a sexy voice and all the rest of it. I don't believe any of that. I believe that everybody walks around quite guarded, and when they're in the studio and you know, they're safe and they feel comfortable with me and they're talking to me and I take control, I'm very assertive in my shoot, as you know. So, you know, I'm bossy and I'm in charge. So once I take the power and I allow them to sort of relax, you just literally, people just bring it forward. It's something that's inside everybody. They just need to be relaxed enough to bring it out of them. So
how do you get to that relaxed point?
I just speak to people and I ask them to give it to me. And if they hold back, I just keep talking to them so that they know that it's okay to let it come forward.
And what are ways that people, because it's kind of ethereal, so I'm going to break this down. Like, what are ways that you could describe physically that you see people holding back? Like, what do they do? Like, are they tight in the mouth? Are they tight in the eye? Like, what are some things that they do and how do you get them to let it go?
Yeah, all of their tension in their mouth, for starters. Hands, you can see the tension in hands because people can look almost relaxed in their face, but the hands are either in a fist, a claw, or the Thunderbird, as I call it. So just to watch.
There's names for it. That says it all.
The Thunderbird.
Yeah, so there's, you know, the fist is tied or the claw is like, and then the Thunderbird always makes me laugh. But really just to keep asking them, it's always through that mouth and it's always just holding back in the eyes. And as soon as you relax the mouth and ask for the eyes, they come forward. It's right there.
So relax the mouth.
And relax the face, relax the mouth. Just and then bring the expression through the eyes.
So that's what you'll actually physically say.
Yeah, very much. Yeah.
And then as far as bringing the expression to their eye, if they're just not getting it, what's a way? I mean, because you hear people say, smile with your eyes, smile with your eyes. But it's kind of hard to understand that when you're being shot, you're being photographed.
I'll take the camera away and I'll look at them directly and I'll do it. The expression. So as soon as I do it, they look straight back at me. And
because you do. You want to mimic.
You do.
Because you just did it to me and I just went.
You did.
So the face. I wanted to do it myself.
In body language, the face you look at mirrors your own.
Yeah.
You know, so if you talk to someone with a stern face, they talk back to you with a stern face. So generally, the second I'll relax my face and give that eye contact, that they'll do it straight away.
So obviously, from what you're saying, it's important for you as a photographer to be calm and relaxed throughout the entire session.
I'm not often calm. I'm usually bossy and throwing out orders. But what's important is that I know what to ask for. And so I've practiced for hours and hours in my own expressions and poses. So I know what works.
What are things people can do to practice?
Mirror work. Just practicing all of the poses that you do in the mirror. So
that makes sense.
Yeah.
So you have to learn. I'll do it to camera so that people can see. So
I love it. I was scared to ask.
Okay,
let's bring it. I tried to get camera to do this, and she didn't do it for me.
Okay. So one of the things that I teach in workshops is about going through all of the expressions. So people will hold all of their tension, you know, in their mouth or here or awkward smiles. And it's about teaching people and teaching yourself how to go through a range of expressions that a camera faces where you've got a relaxed mouth and that you can do real smiles without doing silly smiles, without tension, relaxing the bottom lip, dropping the bottom lip, engaging the eyes, lots of smiling in the eyes. All those expressions are so subtle. But if you're looking at someone and doing them, they'll do them back to you.
So you're not telling the models to look in the mirrors prior to the shoot. You, in fact, are doing it yourself.
The photographers.
The photographer.
Yeah.
Is doing it themselves, getting them packed, nailed down, and then asking the mirror to model them during the shoot.
Yes.
So anytime you feel like the model's getting tight or things aren't going right, you'll pull your face away from the camera. Yep. You'll connect with them. Mm-hmm. You'll give them the eyes that you want. Mm-hmm. You'll give them the lips that you want. So, in essence, you're in control the entire time.
Always. Right down to the last eyelash where they're looking. Yeah. I never leave them out there on their own, and I don't stop talking. Because as soon as you stop talking, there's a camera between you, and they start to think about how they're being, that they're in front of a camera, that there's suddenly the self-conscious veil drops back over. You can see it come back over.
So what are you saying?
Constantly just directing. Working the body, pushing the shoulder forward, bringing your chin to me, lots of expression, keep going. This is really beautiful. I'm just constant talking. As soon as my camera comes up, I don't stop talking.
That makes sense. Mm. Really fascinating. Mm. So we have something super exciting.
Yeah, well,
I'm really, really, really excited about it. Actually, before we go to that, I do have one question.
Sure.
What about men? Because I see this, you're saying, you know, giving this directing advice. And for a female, it's easy for me to say, okay, give me this, give me this. What do you advise for men?
I actually was taught by a man. So,
really?
So when people say, can men do this? Beauty images, yes, they can. They can make women feel comfortable and confident and beautiful just like women can. The difference.
Even more so in some ways.
Well, maybe. I don't know.
And it's unique. Yeah. They have ways in which they can do it that we can't.
So the man that taught me really loved women, and he wasn't, you know, he was really relaxed around them and just loved them, and it wasn't awkward or sleazy or anything. He did was just perfect, the way he spoke to women and appreciated their beauty and the way he worked with them. Yeah, so he could do it. So I think anyone can do it.
What type of photographer is the ideal glamour photographer?
Somebody that can take control of somebody in your studio that's quite... People react really badly when they're nervous, and it is very vulnerable. It's a vulnerable situation to be photographed. I find you have to kind of take charge, and so you have to be quite authoritative, but you have to be able to read people really well and just move with what they're doing. You know, sometimes people react in a really strange way, and they can be quite badly behaved. You know, some people act like children when they feel vulnerable, so it's quite weird.
What's an example of a way someone's reacted
in an
unmanageable way?
Yes.
And that, how did you bring them back?
I had a woman come into my studio. At the time, I was quite young, so I was about 27, and I wasn't, she was older than me, and she instantly just barreled over me in terms of me taking control of the shoot. And whenever I held her gaze to the camera, so whenever I could just hold her gaze enough to take a photo, she'd go, yuck, 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 and then throw her head away.
She'd say that?
Yeah, and I couldn't hold her gaze. She just did not want to look at the camera, and she just felt so just vulnerable. And I didn't understand enough when I was younger about how people act or react when they feel that vulnerable.
Yeah.
I just thought she was being, you know,
bizarre. We'll just leave it at that.
And so really now I've just learned to say, just trust me, come on, it's okay, you can do this. And I've learned how to get through it. But back then I was mystified by it.
Do you think it's born from people not having faith in you? When you say just trust me, is that what is
Well, now I would say, okay, I would stop it straight away from happening. But back then I was not equipped to take charge. So I guess that's authority, and that I'm confident enough to tell her to trust me and believe it.
Got it.
Yeah. So,
and if
I had to surprise her. So I had to make her look down and then go, snap, every time she looked up. I just had to keep trying.
You had to figure out some way to make this
all. Yeah, I just had to keep surprising her. It's quite funny.
So you have, you're going to love this one, Alex. You won't guess this, but she has a black belt. Tell me about your black belt and tell me how that affects your photography.
I studied Japanese karate for 6.5 years and I'm a black belt. It's a personality type.
What's the personality type?
Just to be that tenacious, to master something, to spend 3 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year for 6.5 years to achieve something. And
what age were you when you did this?
25 when I started and 31 when I retired.
Oh, wow.
So, it was a great period of my life, and I guess I work the same way now that I probably, you know, when I do something, I want to do.
Did you learn really anything from that? I mean, that's insane, like the amount that went into that.
Yeah.
How did that help you as a photographer? I know that we're all shaped by our experiences.
That you can get beaten down so often and you can just stand up. You learn to be incredibly tenacious and resilient, and that, you know, sometimes somebody tells you you can't do something and that makes you want it more. And
has anyone ever told you you can't do what you're doing?
Yes. Yeah.
And what have they said and how have you reacted?
Somebody once told me when I was really young that I would never be a photographer because I lacked people skills, and that I had poor dress sense and bad elocution. So
but it's poor dress sense and bad what?
And I remembered that. Isn't that funny? But, you know.
Yeah, it was like, you were like, still right? Trying to get that one out of my shoulders.
That
like,
came out too.
Yeah. It's all good.
Yeah, no. I think, you know what? I actually believe that people don't say things to you. People only say out loud what you think in your own head.
Okay, so elaborate on that.
That you attract everything in your life. I believe this. So I believe that their lack of belief in myself was just mirroring my own belief that I could never be a photographer.
Oh, and so how did you overcome that?
Well, I didn't try to be good enough. I just fell in love with what I did, and then everybody else did.
Okay, got it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, you can't try to be better for other people. You can only love what you do every day, and then people just love it because people are so drawn to passion and joy. And
well, they run into so few people that are full of passion and joy.
And when you do, you want it. You want some of it.
And that's what's fun when you're in, especially when you're in a creative environment. I mean, that's one of the fun things about being here, you know, in Twit and Pixcore, is that there's so many people that are passionate about what they're doing, and that, and you kind of feed off of that energy of what's going on inside of an office. You know?
It's so interesting because I think as artists, we go through this. We're conditioned to think that you have to work hard and you're going to be struggling and all those things. And I remember in the beginning of my career, I felt like if I was earning money on photography, I had to have some sort of like, I was working so hard, working so hard. And I was actually seeing a psychologist at the time, and she said, celebrate, have fun, love it. You don't have to tell your clients you're working hard. Just tell your clients how much you love their work, how passionate you are about it, how that's such a lighter, airier, celebratory state to be in. And it took me a while to transition out of that sort of, you almost think since you're making money on it, your passion, there has to be that sort of like tangent negative to it, that like I'm work hard, 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 work, work, work. And it's not that I don't work hard, but it's that celebration of enjoying it and loving it and all of it. So
absolutely,
but you have to come to that. I'm going to quote you, and I want you to elaborate on this. Only person ever in your way is you.
Yes.
And this is my favorite part. Take responsibility for that.
Yeah. Okay. Wow, when did I say that?
She's like, I've changed my mind.
Yeah, it's all your fault.
That was last year.
Look, everything I've ever had to accomplish in my life, the only person who ever stood in the way was me and what I believed. So if you take that away, if you change that mindset, if you shift your focus, everything shifts. You know, I've been the quintessential artist with $3 in my bank and no idea of how to pay rent next week. And yet that was my folio. That's what my folio looked like. So how could I do what I do and not believe in myself enough to make money? So I've been all of that. I've been struggling. I've been poor. You know, I've tried to go leave photography and go and get a job. Now, I've done that twice in the first 10 years.
What
of
were
my
those
career.
Jobs?
I worked in a jewelry store.
Oh my gosh!
I know, and I lasted 3 weeks. And a woman walked up to me, one of the managers, and she walked up to me and she went, "You can take your 10-minute break now."
And
I remembered standing there thinking, "Oh my God, how did I get here? I'm an artist." Yeah.
How do you pull yourself out? I mean, you obviously had the realization, but how did you change your thought process and perspective to attract what you wanted versus what you were,
I think,
unintentionally attracting?
The short version is that if you're trying to be something, you're in your ego. But if you're just being it, you're in your enthusiasm. Ego breeds more negative and more. Everything negative comes with ego. But when you're in just pure enthusiasm, when you're lost in what you're doing, and you love doing something so much, you would actually do it for free. Once you get lost in that and really share that, then it perpetuates on a positive. So you just have to write goals for what you want, and then every day actively participate in achieving them. So don't sit back and go, I wish I could have this, or I wish I could have that. If your goal is to make $1 million, then tell me 20 ways you can do it, and then start one tomorrow.
So give me numbers. I want to hear about, this is really fascinating, the growth of your studio.
I made a decision. I was struggling. I was poor. I had been a photographer in the studio for 10 years. I had been a paid photographer, so I had a beautiful folio, but I was earning $400 a week as a wage.
Right.
I left there because I didn't like it anymore. I struggled for 1 year, and what fed me was teaching photographers Photoshop. So photographers won't pay someone else to do their Photoshop, but they'll pay $100 an hour to learn it. So that fed me for a year, still only earning around $400 a week, paying my rent. I was 32 with nothing. And then one day my car blew up. I had no savings. I had nothing, no way to create, or I had to go and borrow money to buy a new car, which I could not pay back because I was self-employed with no income. And so I made a decision. So I thought, well, I have to get serious now. So I sat down and I wrote a marketing plan, and I created in 3 months a brand. I painted my garage, inside garage, and I started to just actively market myself, which I had never done before. I was too scared to put myself out there. And a lot of photographers say that they're marketing themselves, or a lot of creatives say they are, but they're actually not. They talk about it a lot, but they don't actually do anything. So I actively, and it took everything I had. I was so afraid.
And what does actively mean?
Oh, I went, I knocked on doors. Mm-hmm. I emailed people. I phoned people. It made me sick to my core. I was so afraid of rejection.
Okay.
And
who do you call, though? When you want to, who are you calling?
Yeah, you paint your garage. You have nothing.
I called other businesses.
Okay.
And I said, I want you to give me to your clients. I want you to give me to your databases. But I wouldn't expect you to do that until you've tried me yourself. And so I gave every one of those business owners a $500 shoot voucher. I had nothing to lose.
Right, right.
Yeah.
That's great.
And once they met me, and they fell in love with their work and my work, they gave me to everybody. I booked from that first round of marketing 297 makeovers in 3 weeks. So I went from nothing
to being overwhelmed
to being fully booked for 3.5 months. And our studio went from nothing to $20,000 a week in turnover in 13 weeks.
13 weeks.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
And I had, at the end of 13 weeks, I had a business partner who was my second photographer and two makeup artists full-time who I was teaching Photoshop. And then that was the launch in 2003 of my business, and I've been a business person ever since.
Hmm. Yeah. Into business. So tips for people that may not want to necessarily do this as a career, but they kind of want to dabble in it cheaply. So paint the garage. What else could you do that's not going to require to break a leg, arm and a leg, or break the bank? I mean,
I set up
all those things.
I set up that entire studio, including the couch and the plasma TV, for $3,000. The whole thing. Cheap curtains. I painted it myself. I any furniture that I found and thrown out, I painted white and put it in the studio. So it was done so cheaply. My reflectors are $15 each.
Yeah, tell us about your... We're going to get... Well, actually, we'll touch on that with the gear section.
Yeah.
But she is going to tell us how to get a $15 reflector.
Yeah.
That she uses to...
I have a hard time. I need to see this $15 reflector. This thing that you speak of.
Anyway, so one of the things that I was so excited about having her here is she actually... Well, why don't you announce? What did we do on Sunday?
Well, the thing, like I always say to people, is you can't, you wouldn't expect me to, unless you'd experienced it for yourself. So, I made Catherine do a shoot.
She made me.
That's the way to do it. That is the way to do it.
I was very, very grateful. So
we're going to see the photos.
We're going to see the photos on the show, and she's going to walk us through it. I'm going to, share my experience. And before we do that, we do have a quick little break. Okay. But definitely stay tuned for some awesome, I'm super excited. I haven't seen them all yet.
I haven't seen any of them. I'm sitting there. I have the files.
If I could just look like the way I look in those photos all the time, the world would be a better place.
Before we get to that, we want to thank Ring Central Creative. This is You know, one of the things that Twit has really moved into is using Ring Central, which is the leader in cutting-edge office phone systems. So this is basically a phone system in the cloud. So, you know, you don't need the PBX box. A lot of us remember the old-fashioned, they bring in these PBX boxes and hook them up downstairs in the basement. You don't need to do any of that. It's totally affordable. It doesn't cost thousands of dollars. It's totally easy to set up. You get more features than the old-fashioned hardware PBX. You get a fax in your inbox. It works with your smartphone and a lot more. It's just really an amazing way to kind of move forward. It's $25 per month per user, and that includes unlimited usage. So you definitely want to take a look at Ring Central.
That is awesome.
I mean, it's like, you know, you're just kind of like,
wow.
Well, this is because I think a lot of us are stuck in between this situation where, like, we have an office phone, but everyone's got cell phones, and everyone's got, and no one really knows, and we don't really spend much on the office phone because, you know, this is PixelCore. Now, Twit has really moved to this Ring Central. Now, we're looking, we're really looking at this because, you know, you get into this in between of how do I make both of these worlds work, you know, because we're kind of in that transition, and Ring Central is a great place to start, and I mean, this is just a great way to solve this problem. So you can get rid of that old PBX system in the basement, or don't bother getting one if you don't have one, and try out Ring Central. And you know, this is something that Twit's already done. Leo trusts them. You should definitely give it a shot. You should trust them too. You know, so what you want to do is start right now with a 30-day risk-free trial at ringcentral.com, or you can call 1-800-800-4070. That's right. It's 1-800-800-4070. And again, 1-800-800-4070, ringcentral.com. And now we get to see the photos.
Without further ado.
Get the photos.
I think I'm the most excited for this part.
We need the photos. All right. So hold on. Let me hide this.
So I have to say, I just want to give one little disclaimer. It's interesting, or perception. Before we talked, I did what a lot of people do, I think, that look at your website, and they assume you're doing a ton of retouching, and that you're morphing. It's no longer that person anymore. And it was fascinating to me because I see these images of myself, and that's what I looked like on that day. And that's just what she brought out in me. It is not Photoshop.
No.
You know, it's... that's how I remember feeling and being on that day. So that's why I think you have the skill that's just, I've never seen anyone else have. It's just phenomenal.
So it's about choosing four outfits that are you, really, aren't you? That represent what you like to wear and who you are. And it's beautiful.
So one of the things that you brought to the shoot that I think is super important is starting off with the hair and makeup and really emphasizing that and being involved with the process. I know a lot of photographers are disconnected with the hair and makeup process, and you weren't. You were there the entire time, and you work with makeup artists on a regular basis and really direct them. What are you looking for?
Let's just stop there.
Let's take a look at, this is our before and after.
Are you ready?
So
by the way, and this is, I'm being vulnerable here. I was scared to do this, but this is me rolled out of bed. I don't even have,
she has wet hair too.
My hair is wet in a ponytail. I have 000 makeup on, not even like anything.
And you don't want to look different. You just want to look polished and gorgeous. You don't, the idea is not that you look too far away from how you looked on the day. That's really, really important. So I don't want my makeup artist to do something that's too far away from what you would wear, or what you would do if you were getting ready for an event.
So what's the direction that you would give a makeup artist? Say you're a new photographer, you don't have a makeup artist that you can trust. What do you tell them to achieve this sort of look?
Not too much makeup. Matte eyes go, they can do their eyes as dark as the client wants them. It's not me, it's up to the client. If they want a natural eye, they can have natural eyes. And lots of soft volume in the hair. So it's, that's it. Mattes, a light dusting of pink on the cheeks. The rules I said before.
And what about hair?
I want the hair to definitely have a little bit of movement in it. Straight hair is harder to photograph. Hair with softness in it definitely looks fantastic, blows really well, has lots of volume. But the truth is that if people want straight hair, then they have to be photographed with straight hair. So, and if they have short hair, they have short hair.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and the other thing too is she's just saying it blows well. A lot of time you see fans on set, and yes. one thing that we used during our shoot was a blow dryer, and it was great because it was warm. Yeah. And a small tip, and it's directional too, so you can really aim it.
Also, this is Clifford.
Oh yeah, we got to talk about Clifford for a second.
This guy's just a genius.
Clifford Hashimoto.
Everyone was talking about Clifford. I mean, before the show, there was a lot of
I could only have Clifford every day of my life, it would be a better world.
He's a genius. I've worked with over 400 makeup artists in my career, and I've met 5 good ones, and he's definitely one of those 5. So, you know, I have favorites, and he's really magical. And he's wonderful. He's very gifted. He's wonderful.
He's brilliant. He's actually, I would say he's I don't use the word brilliant loosely.
And he's in San Francisco, right?
Yeah, he's in San Francisco. Clifford Style, you can look him up, Clifford Hashimoto. For anything, anytime you need makeup, whether it's for an event or getting your hair done, anything, he's the best.
I think his gift too is the way he listens to what you want. And, you know, his work is above his ego, so he was there for you and me. He wasn't there for himself.
Yeah.
And he was incredible. Great. Amazing to work.
Couldn't say good stuff about him.
Because makeup and hair can go really horribly wrong.
Well, that was the thing that actually I would say one of the reasons why I appreciate him so much is I didn't have to. A lot of time when I'm getting my hair and makeup done, I'm on edge.
Yes.
I'm watching them and I'm thinking like, oh, I don't know. With him, I could just let go, and having that faith made it such a more comfortable, wonderful experience for me as being the model that day, knowing that I was taken care of.
And this was the studio too. It was such a neat studio that we got to shoot in, because obviously I require natural light and you had to accommodate me in this sense. So what is this place called?
Oh my God. This is like a dude's paradise.
It's the dude's paradise.
It's for photographers and filmmakers. It's
amazing. Yeah. It's like this guy, his name's Philippe. He, phenomenal guy. He basically, I think he honestly, like, it's, you know how guys like their man cave, like, right. like space. I think he dreamed up like, what would be like the best fantasy studio for me? Like, what's my toy studio?
Mm-hmm. It has
and
nine
he created
rooms.
This. It has 9 rooms. Yeah. If you go to the website, it's insane. It has 9 rooms. And each room has a theme.
Yes.
This is Island Events.
Yeah, Island Events. And this is right in Treasure Island. That's the boudoir room. You can see how different it looks, you know, depending on how you light it. Isn't this place crazy?
This is awesome.
Mm.
Yeah, it's insane.
They had, the day before we were there, they had a Ferrari in the actual center of the studio shooting like a Kill Bill.
Now that does make it the ultimate dude room.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ferrari in the center.
Well, we have some Kill Bill. We could show that at the end. But we have a Kill Bill shoot from there. So for all the guys that want to see some really cool action, neat stuff done in a studio, we'll close with that. Anyway, we'll go back to shoot. But going back to what you were saying, it's interesting because you changed my perception in that. That's really what I felt like I looked like. And that confidence that you bring out in me.
Beautiful.
What were some of your top posing tips?
People need to learn to direct, not pose. And people need to learn how to create body language with posing. So in order to believe a pose, you essentially need to teach people how to direct hands and movement through the body and not just the expression. Once you can do that, I mean, models do that naturally, but real people do not move well. They do not laugh candidly. They do not, know what they're doing. So it's as long as you can create that body language, learning to touch the body instead of trying to pose and position it makes a big difference.
And then what are some tips on creating that motion? Like what are some things you tell your models?
Chin forward and down is something that I always laugh about as being the best advice that I could give anybody, is to bring the chin away from the neck and to push the chin forward and down, and learning how to use hands to touch. But mostly the same applies. I work with Mirror Me, so I pose, they pose. So I show them, they mirror me. And so it's one of the best ways to pose and direct.
So you're not saying, okay, move your right arm back. Because then people are like, my right, your right.
Yeah,
it's you just say, mimic me, and then they do it. So just, a lot less talking in that sense. That was the thing that I found. And it was great because at the very beginning, she just said to me, I'm going to say chin forward and down the entire shoot. You're going to hear me say it over and over and over again. Mm-hmm. And I think if you hadn't said that, it would have gotten annoying and I would have felt like I wasn't doing something right. But because she pre-warned me that was something she was going to remind me of and that was to be expected.
And it is the secret to the operation.
It is. Chin forward and down and relax your mouth.
Everyone always asks me, like, when they see photos of me, you're like, why do you always look thinner on the photo than you do in real life? And I was like, I dated someone a long time ago that taught me just to pull my chin forward and be that. Like, you know, it's just, but you can always see me right before someone takes a photo, you see my head just kind of cocked forward.
Yeah,
you know, just and anybody who's had that, you know, it's.
So on America's Next Top Model, Tyra Banks calls it the turtle.
Oh, the turtle. Yeah.
Oh, interesting. So there's names. So the photographers need to be doing this in the mirror.
Yes.
They need to be turtling
in
the mirror.
They need to be pushing their chin forward and down in everybody. Lean bodies, curvy bodies, everyone. Chin forward and down.
It always looks better.
It does.
We had
because also, when you're to camera, your face is up and your eyes are small and you have no definition in your chin, when your chin comes forward and down, you not only get perfect definition in your face, you get nice, big, wide open eyes.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Mm. One thing I thought was interesting is I always hear a lot of emphasis from photographers on, for beauty shots, to shoot down versus...
No, I shoot up.
You shoot up. Can you explain why?
Fashion models are 5'10" and maybe 90 pounds. So you can shoot them on any angle and they look fantastic. So I shoot below the eye line. So you can always see me slightly below the eye line in every image. And the difference is everybody thinks shooting down is slimming, but I get my position lower than the eye and get them to work their body forward and down. So it's a more fashion angle. So I shoot on a fashion angle, even though I have, you know, usually bodies that don't look like models, although you look like a model.
I do after you.
I love that.
So we had a viewer question that I'm going to just throw out there.
Yeah.
How was Catherine? Was she easy or difficult model to shoot?
She was very easy to shoot. She was a little difficult at the before shot.
Oh, no.
She was like, I'm not doing this. And I was like, yeah, you are. And she's like, oh, no, but I get to see it first. No, no, you're not.
Yeah,
no.
She didn't give me much.
No, she was really, really easy to shoot, yeah. Definitely.
What makes someone easy and what makes someone hard, and how do you work through someone that's difficult?
Trust. Trust me. Just trust that I can see it and that I know what I'm doing. And if they can't trust you, if they just can't let go of that idea that it doesn't feel right, it's not meant to feel right on your side, it's meant to look right on mine, you really have to trust that I can see it. And if they can't trust me, then I just say, look, when you look at them, if you don't like them, you can throw them away and you don't have to buy them and nobody will see them but us. So then they relax a little bit more and say, oh, okay, nobody's going to see them. So, and then I photographed a girl recently and she said something to me that nobody has ever said to me before. She said, my greatest fear is that I would feel incredible and beautiful and then I would look at the photographs and go, oh, no, they're horrible. And they would not look like how I felt when I was with you that day.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that's interesting, so... I've just got to keep asking for what it is that I can see and keep telling you that I can see it.
Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah, and you were very trusting. You just let me do what I needed to do.
Yeah. Well, that was easy.
Yeah. Oh.
Your portfolio speaks for itself. What about people that don't have the portfolio? And so it's... I look at your work and it's kind of a no-brainer. Like, of course I'm going to trust you. But what about new photographers that may, A, not have the confidence to project that trust, you know, and then don't have the work?
But I only needed to show you two good shoots.
Okay.
Yeah. And in order to get you to trust me, really I only needed to show you two good
shoots. That's true.
And a before and after that blew you away. So
what would you do if you didn't have a portfolio at all?
Test shoots.
Two test shoots, which goes back to what we're talking about.
Or enough shoots until you get two freebies. Shoots that are good.
You need two shoots that are good.
Exactly.
Because a lot of that does come from that. You know, especially with this kind of stuff, you need to see their work.
And you also have to do it. I mean, yeah. the thing is that, you know, yes. how do, you know, it's not only the test shoots just to prove that
it's
you can do it.
It's
doing it so that you can do it because you're going to, you know, it's just the map is so different than the territory.
And the biggest mistake everybody makes, and I've seen it time and time again, particularly here, is maybe in New Zealand and Australia it doesn't kind of fly, but they get girls from Model Mayhem and girls that are modelly types, and they show those. It's you must show real women.
Yeah, yeah.
You can't show models. You must show curvy girls. I mean, they can be pretty and beautiful, sure, but I can tell the difference between a real woman and a model and in you know, 0.5 seconds. So your target market need to identify with who it is that you're trying to attract. So if they don't identify with it, then they don't. You won't get them. If you put really modelly, perfect bodies, you show in boudoir and it's just long legs, and then your client's going to look at you and say, I can't achieve that. And yeah. they won't come to you.
Well, that's actually, you were just, at the beginning of the show, you were discussing the importance of before and afters.
Yeah.
And can you elaborate on how that connects?
I never wanted to show before and afters on my website, but I got hundreds of requests to say, can we see more before and afters? And then when I started to do shows, like to promote my business, I would go to expos. I tried hiring the big visual plasma display and nobody stops and watches it. But if I put five albums on a table of before and afters, I had a line of people wanting to touch and just look at the before and afters. And I think as a society, we are captivated by the transformation of going from zero to hero. We love that story, and for some reason, women identify not with the girl on the right, but the girl on the left.
Yeah, that's true.
And yet, secretly, they know that they could probably look as good, if not better, than the girl on the right. So it's a weird juxtaposition of, yeah, it's crazy.
Well, I think I'd also, she mentioned earlier, it makes it attainable.
Yeah.
So you see, like, for example, if I didn't see all the fours and I saw all these afters, right. I would think, oh, these are all just beautiful women. Da, da, da. Mm-hmm. Like, everyone's beautiful, obviously, in their own way.
Like, but I love this one. This girl never wears her hair down. So she wears her hair in a ponytail, you know, every day. And, yeah.
So in her house, people are going to go, who is that?
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, she's just a sporty chick, doesn't wear a lot of makeup and... But she just, yeah, was so incredible. She also collects all this vintage lingerie that she doesn't ever wear out or anything like that. So her shoot was just magnificent. So, you know, and she's 40 and she's just got this beautiful folio. It was such a cool shoot.
That's great.
Well, we have lots of tips and gear and other items to go through. So we'll take a little break and then we'll resume.
We'd also like to thank, of course, Netflix. No, this one's easy. I mean, the Netflix is something that I have interaction with almost every day.
I'm embarrassed to say yes. I agree.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. The with Netflix, of course, whether it's your Android phone, your laptop, your iPad, your iPhone, your computer, your Roku, your Apple TV, no matter where you are, once you have that subscription, once you build that queue, it's something that is just, you can have instant access to all of that. Now, evidently, they've gone back and forth about actually sending you DVDs. Well, almost all of us started by getting DVDs from Netflix. You know, you can subscribe and get up to 8 DVDs, which you really have to be committed to watching a lot of movies.
Yeah, that's a lot.
But one or two is fine. I have to admit, I have not had a DVD mailed to me in years. I think it's still sitting on my subscription.
Yeah.
But you know, all I do is use the Instant Play. So I mean the so you can also, of course, use it on your Xbox 360, your PS3, your Nintendo Wii. I mean, just about any device that you're using. You know, that most of us on average are using, you can get Netflix on. And of course, you can watch movies, TV shows. There's a lot of things that.
Because people aren't watching TV anymore.
Well, I have to admit that with Netflix, it makes it pretty easy to skip TV altogether.
With Twit Network, I mean, why do you got to go on television?
Exactly. I mean, you have great podcasts. So when you're not watching tech shows, you've got your movies. And I have to admit, a lot of times, I'm just waiting for things. If for some reason it's not on Netflix, I'm just going to wait until it shows up.
Yeah, that's how I do it.
I actually root against movies now because I'm like, the worse this movie does in the box office, the faster I'm going to get together on Netflix.
No.
And
so,
and you know, but Netflix, just, you know, it's constantly, here you got Breaking Bad seasons 1 through 3 that you can.
Leo keeps telling me I have to watch that. I haven't watched it yet.
Well, now that there's three seasons on Breaking Bad, I got through Dexter, and now there's three seasons of
finish Dexter.
Yeah, I'm caught up now, and now I'm there's yeah, and
Dexter rocks.
Oh, Dexter is so great. Anyway, so but getting Breaking Bad is just, you know, that's another example of something. Now you can watch the whole episode, you know, all the episodes one after the other for a very, very low monthly rate. So it's definitely the way to go.
Sue, favorite movie?
All-time favorite?
All-time favorite.
Oh, that's a big
one. Or favorite recent?
I've actually been captivated by this.
The Walking Dead?
Oh, I bought the series when I got to New York, and I watched the entire series in 24 hours.
Oh, my gosh.
And I get to see the first episode before I go back to Australia next week. I get to see it. Very cool.
I have to see. I haven't seen that one.
Oh, it's fantastic.
What's so great about it?
I love zombies. So. Yeah,
the zombies.
Yeah, well, zombies. And it's great when you're trying to figure out. A lot of us, you know, if you're a parent, by the way, there are tons of kids.
Oh,
you know, whether it's, you know, and all of you parents will understand these Caillou. Caillou is like a big, you know, Dora the Explorer. These are all very important. They're all on Netflix. It's very, very important when you're trying to keep the kids at bay. So anyway, you can cancel this anytime. You can set it up. It's just it's really, really easy. If you want to get a 30-day free trial, go to netflix.com/twit. And then you can get a free trial, 30 days. Give it a shot. Wow. Look, you know, try it on your different devices. It really is an amazing service. There's Caillou right there. There's about a time between there about 1.5 and 2.5 is the time when I'm just obsessed with this
wow.
The show. Again, netflix.com/twit, and we thank Netflix for their support of the Twit Network.
Very cool.
Yeah, perfect. So we're gonna launch right into your tips.
Cool.
So we've already talked about the first one, which is showing before and afters.
Yes.
So you don't need to do that. But number one tip, show before and afters. Number two, learn how to pose real women.
Yes. So when I created a posing manual, because photographers were asking me to teach them, the one thing that they kept saying to me was, we want real curves. Like, we want... I don't use the term plus size. That term needs to be removed from all vocabulary. It's offensive. And I just say curvy girls. So I photograph real women, girls with curves, and you just need to learn the rules. That's a perfect example of chin forward and down. Kate is actually my curvy model in Sydney. She's just got the most fantastic body, and she lets me take the most horrible photographs of her and then shows, you know, can show people how beautiful she is, and she's so wonderful. She's also a photographer, a wedding photographer. So, you know, she's got great curves, and people don't photograph them well. The woman is booking the portrait. The woman is booking the wedding. If you can nail this as a photographer, she's buying as well. She's your consumer. She just wants to look good. I've never had a client in 20 years come to me and say, please make me look wider. You know, they all want to look fabulous and, you know, a little bit slimmer and younger. There's no Photoshop on the image. That's all about placement, taking the weight on the back foot, leading with the shoulder, bringing the chin forward and down, and using the body to show beautiful curves. So I am doing more and more product for posing curves because it's my biggest request right now.
I was about to ask, so can we get this?
And yeah, not yet. I'm going back to edit more video. I've been videoing myself shooting Kate in lots of different positions and outfits, and people just want more and more curves. So I've got curvier girls lined up that have put up their hand that said, I want to be a curvy girl. And because it's easy to find curvy girls, but they don't want to be shown in the bad light, the way other people shoot them. So I have to find girls that are okay with taking the bad shot as well.
Yeah, like the before.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Learning to do simple things like this without Photoshop will save you hours and hours and hours and sell you more portraits. So
what were you telling her here?
We're creating what I call faux waste. So like faux fur, not real fur. Mm-hmm. It's not a real waist. We're creating the illusion of a smaller waist and pushing that chin forward, connecting the shoulder, We covered up the arms, not to hide them, but because they were too white, you know. She's so beautiful skin and got that sort of contrast of white skin and black hair. And we wanted to take the focus into that waist point. None of these images have been photoshopped by any stretch of the imagination.
Can you go back to the first one, Alex? Can you tell me what you told her?
She's got all of her weight on her back foot with her bum pushed away from me and then back to the wall. So she's got an arch into her back. She's holding her elbows with her elbow towards me to take the weight from the breast line to the front arm, which can make the front arm look wide. She's driving her chin forward. She's 45 degrees from the camera. So she's really working that position. It's a hard position to hold. It actually hurts. It's like a Pilates workout.
She looks comfortable, but yeah.
Yeah, and it's so easy to achieve. The left one, she's just standing normally, just standing up, waiting for my direction. So to shift the weight onto the back foot, huge difference.
Do you warn models that this is, or real women models, that this is going to be uncomfortable?
Well, I don't shoot models, so
I mean,
my
real
clients,
women, sorry.
Yeah. Oh, my clients, I always tell them it's like beauty is pain. It's like wearing stilettos. They hurt, but they look fantastic.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, they'll ring me the next day and tell me they have sore muscles.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting. This goes back to, we had Arnie Freytag, the like the number one Playboy photographer on, and that was one of the things he said. You know, the Playboys, it's so convoluted. You're getting so many angles and pushing things. And the women, the girls are just like, this can't look good while they're doing it.
Yeah.
But they see the images and it just looks natural.
Looks weird.
Yeah.
It feels weird. Looks great.
So, I find the next one to be really interesting because I would have never thought this would be one of your tips.
Oh, well.
Don't use.
No more liquify.
Don't use liquify.
Ever again. Ever, ever, ever again. Don't touch it.
One of the questions from our viewers was, how much liquify are you using?
Yeah, I don't use liquify. Yeah, I've never used it, actually. I don't like it.
Why don't you like it?
I don't like how long it takes to load once you set it. But one of the things, the warp tool, so to lasso, and I have done an example of this on my blog, so you can go and have a look if you don't believe me how incredible this is. Photoshop has a tool called Free Transform. When you right-click in Free Transform on a lassoed layer, you can go down to Warp, and you get this beautiful grid, which you can pick up and move in any angle. For contouring bodies, it is the fastest, most effective, incredible tool I have ever seen used. It is how I do any contouring. Use it responsibly. Seriously, you can really go overboard here. You do not need to. You must use this responsibly. Yeah.
Well, and people are I think some people will get horrified by the fact that you're, you know, using all, doing all this warping. But this is what you're seeing in all the magazines.
Yes, but
this is I'm saying, but this is the average person getting the same tools that we're seeing all the time on the front of every single magazine. None of those people look that way when they take
And also, you're just talking about taking a little pinch in the back of an arm or taking a little line through the waist or you know, I mean, you can dramatically alter an image with these tools. You don't have to. You can take in a double chin. You can even lift up an eyelid that is half closed if one eyelid's coming down. You can do so many great things with this tool. And people are always going to say it's wrong to lose that integrity, but the truth is that it's an embellishment. It's not a lie.
Not much different than makeup. It's digital makeup.
You're right.
I just tell my clients, too, that the camera, there's distortion, and a lot of times I'm literally just fixing that distortion. Or there may be like I'm thin, but if my arm's pressed against my body, it's going to look wide. And so I want to get it back to the way I perceive myself.
Also, often long, lean girls have no waist that goes in. They can be straight up and down.
Yeah.
So really all they want is curves as well. So you can pinch their waistline in to give them curves.
Yeah.
And the camera's cruel. One bad angle.
Right.
And if you have curves or not, one bad angle and you can make somebody very lean look very wide.
Yeah.
It's quite easy.
And it's lens choices too.
Very much.
Which I would love to lead into what your choice lenses, but before I do, I had another assumption. See, working with Sue is like basically like a break of all my assumptions. I thought 85-1-2 would be like your yeah. baby lens, but it isn't.
No.
And why? And what do you use?
I actually shoot on the 24-105. So it's an L series lens, zoom lens, obviously, because I'm in close quarters. I will shoot this far away from you. So I'm usually within a meter and a half from my subject.
And do you like the distortion of the lens, or do you do it because you like
both
being this close?
Yeah, I like the close quarters. I like the distortion. I like the wide. I like the range. And I'll shoot right through the range. But mostly what I really love about it is that I can lie down on the floor in close proximity to my client and take five different compositions without moving, just by zooming in and out. So my only other lens is the 50mm 1.0. So I have that mostly for video. Like, I love that lens for shooting portrait, but it is an amazing video lens.
So the 1.0.
Oh yes, yeah, the 50mm. Yeah.
She has. There's only two of them in Australia.
Now, are you shooting the video actually at 1.0, or is it just that it's sharper at a wider range?
Well, it's an incredible lens, but I actually shot a video for the Fusion Awards this year, and I shot the entire thing at 1.2.
No, it's because
you shot the entire thing at 1.2.
Yeah, the video. Wow. Yeah.
See that.
It's beautiful. I love it.
I mean, and how close were you? Because it seems like once we get this distance away, it would be, you'd have like an eighth of an inch of depth of field, right?
Yeah, I mean, the story, it's on YouTube. Okay. It's Sue Bryce Fusion. Mm-hmm. That it's entered it into the Fusion Awards, and it won gold. I shot it at 1.2 because it's the story of a guy making an 8x10 camera. So it's not so much a shoot.
Right.
You know, I can't shoot clients at 1.2 or 1.0 because, you know, one breathe in and
how would you do that?
I very rarely would go under 2.8 when I'm shooting, because I just don't have, I move too much.
You're moving a lot.
I talk,
and the clients are moving
and
a lot,
I'm hand holding that big camera. So the 1D with the 50mm lens on it is about 2.5, it's about 5 pounds. And it's heavy enough, you know, movement. So
what lens were you using with me the most time?
The 24-105 and the 50.
Okay. Great. And then the last little piece of gear item that might surprise people, that super cheap reflector.
Oh, yes. So there's a reflector on there, polystyrene or styrofoam, you call it. We call it polystyrene. Everything I shoot has two big polystyrene reflectors on either side. So my studio has about 8 of those. It's really amazing. They're like walls. They use them in film. They're called bead wall. And it's just like a firm grade polystyrene they're the best reflectors $15 can buy. And another thing it does is it puts a wall around my clients so they feel safe. So they can be in a really big shooting space or a big studio and be surrounded by reflectors, and they feel really confined and really safe. And yeah, it's I have them everywhere I go. I wish I could travel with them, but it's the only thing you can't do is pack them down and put them in your suitcase.
There you go.
And you're going to be doing a master class?
Yes, tomorrow.
So if you're watching live, if you're not watching live, you're going to have to be able to move quickly. So this is and where is it?
At San Francisco. So we've still got a place left. So if somebody wants to join us, they'll have
someone
to email
come.
It
tonight. Tomorrow. I don't know if she'll ever be back to San Francisco. It would surprise me for a workshop. And I'm going to be there.
Yeah.
Both
excellent.
Days.
Great. That's awesome.
It's a 2-day.
I'm super excited.
Very good.
To learn a ton.
Mm. Thank you so much, Sue.
Yeah, and yes. So you can, obviously her blog's a huge resource.
That's,
you can
that's
find
in,
her.
In the Bed with Sue.
In Bed with Sue.
In Bed with Sue.
Yeah.
In the Bed. In Bed with Sue. I love the name of that, by the way.
And otherwise it's SueBryce.com for your actual photography.
Yes. No, but InBedWithSue.com is the best resource for photographers to connect with me.
Photographers.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah.
And then they can find you on Twitter.
Yes. Sue_Bryce.
Very good.
Very great.
Thanks, Sue.
Thank you so much. More than anything, coming on the show, but more than anything, shooting me. We'll treasure those photographs forever. She said something to me during the shoot that I think I'm gonna steal. It was so good. What did you say? Repeat offenders.
Oh, yeah. I have a lot of repeat offenders.
She says, I have a lot of repeat offenders after the shoot. And I was like, uh-huh. And then I got home. I'm like, when are we going to do another shoot? Next time I'm going to go like this and wear this outfit. I'm going to do this. And who's going to do my hair?
Yeah.
Anyway, it's a good business model.
Yeah,
get people coming back.
I've photographed some girls 5 or 6 times.
Yeah.
You just do one
addictive.
Of those tours.
Yeah. She's addictive.
She's coming to San Francisco and everyone just lines up.
Yeah. That's true.
Absolutely.
So let's wrap it up with showing that Kill Bill shoot from Island Event Studio.
Sorry, I had it up and then
it's all good.
Oh, no. I might have closed it.
Well, anyway, so Philippe, the owner of the studio, this is his shoot. Incredible photographer and very cool guy, generous guy. Any last thoughts for a viewer? Any kind of like steal a deal tip to bring it home?
I think the beauty industry and the glamour industry is a multi-billion-dollar industry, and there aren't enough photographers tapping into the market that I tapped into. And it's right there in front of you. It's what all women want is to look and feel beautiful. And the sooner you can include it somehow into your brand, the sooner you can make money from it.
Yeah. Male or female?
Photographer.
Yeah.
Thanks, Sue.
Yeah, no, thank you.
And thank you, Catherine.
Thank you, Alex.
And thank you all of you for watching. Leo's going to be back next week.
Oh, yeah. And then Alex, thanks very much, so much for co-hosting.
Yeah, my pleasure.
Stepping in for Leo. Really,
and I always enjoy being
I'm sure most of our viewers know about your podcast. However, just in case they don't.
Just to make everything really confusing, there's Twit Photo, and then there's This Weekend Photo. And thisweekendphoto.com, you can go up to check that out.
Yeah, and, it's a great resource, awesome interviews, and a very good compliment to what we're doing here.
Yeah, absolutely.
In Twit
it's a bunch
photo.
Of photographers.
Yeah,
talking.
So
definitely check it out.
Cool.
And once again, thank all of you for watching. This is Twit Photo.